We have a particular concern for undocumented migrant communities in many countries in Asia.
Coronavirus spreads towards especially vulnerable groups. It's Monday, April 13th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, coronavirus seems to have split a nation. Immigration affects U.S. health care at a critical time. As the virus chokes, it also brings cleaner air, coping with anxiety and growing hope in the garden. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The top U.S. infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, warned Sunday there's an extraordinary risk of the further spread of the ravaging coronavirus if the United States is reopened to business and a sense of normalcy too quickly on May 1st, as President Donald Trump is considering. Fauci told CNN it's not going to be a light switch to regenerate the U.S. commerce, as government recommendations for safe distancing between people end in about 2 weeks on April 30th. He held out hope that in some ways the country could return to work and routine day-to-day activities next month, but said it's likely to be different in various parts of the country. That depends, he said, on the number of coronavirus cases in specific communities and whether testing has shown that large majorities of people are not infected. The U.S. coronavirus death toll has topped 20,000. That's the highest total of any country in the world, with more than 534,000 confirmed cases. Current U.S. models predict that some 60,000 people or more could die in the country by July. Meanwhile, the U.N. High Commissioner for Human Rights warned the coronavirus pandemic is likely to widen existing inequalities around the world if left unchecked, among the poor, disabled, homeless, minorities, women, and elderly, among others most at risk. At a virtual meeting, Michelle Bachelet also had stern criticism for governments that she said are using health emergency measures to justify repression and expand their powers. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Dr. Pia Oberoi, UN Senior Advisor on Migration and Human Rights for the Asia-Pacific region based in Bangkok, where she is responsible for developing and implementing research and policy on migration and human rights in the region.
In the response, one of the dangers that we can see is those that are most in danger of being left behind, in the words of the 2030 Agenda, are also most in danger generally of being left behind in the COVID response. And so we see people that are, for instance, living in precarious housing or slum settlements, informal settlements, where you're not able to practice physical distancing, are in danger of kind of being most at risk of transmission, particularly with we have a particular concern for undocumented migrant communities in many countries in Asia, because of the kinds of migration control responses that have been put in place. These communities tend to be very fearful of authorities and are not easily persuaded that kind of contact with the authorities is in their best interest, because normally any contact would result in detention and deportation. So while there have been some commendable practices put in place, for instance, in Malaysia or the Republic of Korea, where we've had sort of firewalls now established, where the authorities have said to migrant communities, look, we're not going to, you know, put immigration penalties if you come forward to be tested if you need care. But in a lot of countries, still there is a high degree of fear and inability, really, to trust the authorities.
What geographic areas throughout Asia are the most affected as far as these migrants and other people who are afraid to seek assistance and help?
Well, so, I mean, we've got, you know, large migrant communities in many countries in Southeast Asia, such as Thailand, the country that I'm living in. We've got large migrant communities in Malaysia and Singapore. There's also big kind of migrant worker populations in places like Japan and the Republic of Korea in East Asia. And we also, the High Commissioner also spoke recently about the situation of internal migrants. In India, for instance, where the announcement of the lockdown caused hundreds of thousands of people to essentially leave urban centers and in the lack of public transportation, try to walk home to their home provinces and home villages. So it's something that the issue is widespread in many kind of the sub-regions of particularly Asia. And we see kind of common but slightly different manifestations of this happening in all of these sub-regions.
Is there anything first the United Nations and then the rest of the world can do to help alleviate this situation?
Well, I think, I mean, the role of our office is really to guide member states in understanding how responses can be human rights respecting and in a sense, therefore, most effective. So, for instance, when we've called in a recent statement that we put out in the Asia-Pacific region, we called for states to establish firewalls between the healthcare service providers and immigration enforcement. And really, in a way, this is to reestablish that bond of trust between communities and you know, authority, in a sense. So it's undocumented communities and authorities.
From the High Commissioner's statement, difficult decisions are facing many governments, she says. Emergency measures may well be needed to respond to this public health emergency, but an emergency situation is not a blank check to disregard human rights obligations. How do you deal with that, and where is that happening the most, and is there anything you could do about that?
No, well, absolutely. I mean, and again, we're seeing in a number of countries in the region, you know, emergency measures have been rolled out. Again, I can think of Thailand, Malaysia, and other countries. Japan has recently put in place an emergency. I think what the High Commissioner is saying and what the office is saying is that this is an unprecedented pandemic in the sense that I don't think that, you know, within our lifetimes we've seen an epidemic with this kind of global spread. So we fully understand that the governments will need to put in place rigorous and kind of, you know, new, in a sense, measures to respond. But at the same time, one of our concerns is that, for instance, we have a number of governments in this region where we are concerned about an authoritarian bent, where due process, for instance, is probably not followed as rigorously as we would hope. So one of the things that we would call for instance, is a regular review of these emergency powers.
Dr. Pia Oberoi, UN Senior Advisor on Migration and Human Rights for the Asia-Pacific region, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. COVID-19 changes Easter observances. Stay home. Australians urge to continue COVID-19 social distancing. Thai provinces ban alcohol sales ahead of New Year to curb coronavirus spread. Southeast Asian ministers endorse plans for pandemic fund. Malaysia loosens lockdown rules to meet soaring global glove demand. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more when you visit VOA Asia on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Also, stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coronavirus cases in the United States doubled this past week, but some say life will never be the same, even for those who do not contract the disease. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti shows us how the United States is ending up with two different populations.
You have probably already noticed the split. There are those who are sick.
I went to get up and I just collapsed on the floor because I was so sick. Like, my body just couldn't move.
And there are those who do not have the coronavirus. There are those who are teleworking and getting paid. And there are those who are out of work.
It's just a scary, you know, another scary aspect of this whole thing. It's just shutting everything too much down.
In Arkansas, hundreds of residents lined up at an unemployment office when online applications failed.
I'm 62. I don't know a lot about the computer.
In Florida, there are lines at a drive-thru unemployment office.
This is 10 times worse than we've seen in a generation.
About 1 in 10 U.S. workers lost their jobs in the past 3 weeks. The $2 trillion stimulus package will help the unemployed. But Ben Harris of Northwestern University says benefits are not immediately available.
In practice, states are not set up to actually deliver them. So the fact that the federal government said in the legislation, look, our intention is for you to actually get the money if you're self-employed or a gig worker, in practice, those people are going to have to wait hopefully just a few more weeks, but maybe much longer to get their benefits, they're going to pay a price.
In Cook County, which includes Chicago, a disproportionate number of African Americans are coronavirus patients, a rate 3 times higher than that of white patients. Business experts predict sickness leads to unemployment, especially for lower income workers, which leads to bankruptcies, businesses, and personal.
Even if we were told to go back to work tomorrow, I mean, the average working family, you know, is only a couple of weeks away from not being able to pay bills.
Analysts predict two populations are emerging in the coronavirus pandemic. Some struggling to eat and to get medical care.
We have a lot of stuff in our fridge.
Others discussing dinner or takeout while the children finish online learning. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, Vietnam has shipped nearly 500,000 protective suits to the United States, marking a quick turnaround in bilateral talks to deal with the significant U.S. shortage in medical equipment. The U.S. Embassy in Hanoi said a second shipment of 450,000 suits from Vietnam would follow. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad, as always, to have you with us on VOA Asia. At a time when America's healthcare system is being strained to the breaking point because of the coronavirus pandemic and states are summoning medical professionals into emergency service, many immigrant physicians say U.S. visa restrictions limit how much they can help. Immigration reporter Eleni Barros has more.
While many hospitals are overwhelmed with COVID-19 patients, foreign doctors working in the U.S. say they stand ready to do more to care for the sick, but visa restrictions are getting in the way.
I'm on a H-1B visa. So that means it's a work visa and I'm authorized to work at a specific hospital and a specific job. It's not even a hospital. Even in my hospital, I can't work in ER if they get overwhelmed. Right now, we are not. But I can't work anywhere except the specific hospital's job.
Speaking from Logan, West Virginia, Dr. Yelamanchili is one of thousands of foreign doctors who are working in the U.S. on temporary visas. His contract gives him 10 days off after working 15 straight days.
We are here, U.S. trained professionals that are not able to help in this crisis.
Those under temporary work visas in the U.S. can only switch jobs if they apply to change their visas. But the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, which adjudicates visa requests, is closed during the coronavirus outbreak. Restrictions on foreign doctors are tightly defined by the residency program and the Educational Commission for Foreign Medical Graduates, says immigration lawyer Greg Siskind.
A lot of rules as far as where doctors are allowed to work, how many hours they can work, and all that has to be approved by the State Department and by ECFMG as far as any variation from what they're supposed to be doing.
Meanwhile, the State Department is encouraging medical professionals seeking work in the U.S. to contact the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate for a visa appointment. Petitions will be handled on a case-by-case basis, according to an email provided to VOA by the State Department. Like many foreign workers, immigrant doctors are ready in the U.S. worried about their ability to work at all if their visas expire while immigration offices are closed.
I'm also worried about my visa paperwork at the same time, just because USCIS is currently not functioning that well. And so I do have a barrier because I need to have some visa paperwork taken care of before the end of June.
Sin, who works on the front lines of the COVID-19 epidemic in West Virginia, is frustrated by the restrictions.
One of the ways of resolving this could be lifting the restriction of visa and allowing physicians to work or just have a different category for physicians because there's dire need of physicians in this country.
In an email to VOA, a USCIS spokesperson says the agency will assess options related to temporary worker programs as needs arise during the pandemic. Alini Barros, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia, Nobuhiko Obayashi, one of Japan's most prolific filmmakers who devoted his works to depicting war's horrors and singing the eternal power of movies, has died. He was 82. Obayashi was told he had just months to live when he was diagnosed with terminal cancer in 2016. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues and as the world fights the coronavirus pandemic, there are questions about whether restrictions to contain the virus are leading to cleaner air and skies. Some say there is a correlation between lockdowns and pollution levels, but some disagree. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo has more.
The European Space Agency says China experienced a 20 to 30% drop of the air pollutant nitrogen dioxide from between mid-December to mid-March.
It was certainly due to the fact that in the Hubei region in China, all activities were reduced dramatically due to the lockdown.
Beatrice Cardenas of the World Resources Institute in Mexico explains how nitrogen dioxide affects the air.
What it does once it's in the atmosphere is not only it has some impacts on the environment and health of the people, but it's also a key pollutant in terms of atmospheric chemistry. Because once it's in the atmosphere, it can react with other pollutants to produce other pollutants.
All that pollution makes it harder to stay healthy.
Being exposed to air pollutants make you more vulnerable to infections like this virus or bacteria.
Analysis by Greenpeace also shows the pollutant emissions in Beijing and its surrounding areas dropped. Compared to previous years, streets and landmarks are no longer covered in smog. Lin Liu is a senior climate and energy campaigner with Greenpeace.
In fact, there are a lot of reasons behind the improvement of overall air quality. But there are two main factors. One is that factories were shut down during the epidemic. The other is the change of people's lifestyle, especially the reduction of traffic.
Beijing resident Liu Chuan takes this as a potential health benefit.
It feels like the air is overall much less polluted than it used to be. It also improves people's mood.
In Europe, cities including Madrid, Brussels, Paris, Milan, and Frankfurt also showed a reduction in average levels of nitrogen dioxide, according to the Sentinel-5 satellite images. In America, Los Angeles, a city with one of the worst smog problems in the country, is experiencing a third straight week of clean air. All this is leading some to wonder if stay-at-home orders are helping to reduce pollution levels. California scientists are looking at the data, but say they haven't reached a conclusion.
Human activities that cause emissions have been diminished. It has rained every other day or every third day. And under those conditions, those are the days where we typically see very good air quality days.
Cardenas says whether it's related to a decrease in human activity or weather patterns, there are some lessons to be learned when this is all over. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Can the coronavirus survive in cold weather? Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you're sick or advised to by local authorities. A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the COVID-19 pandemic has upended people's lives across the globe. In many countries, schools and businesses are closed, families are separated. People are afraid of getting the virus, and they worry their loved ones will get sick and die. A lot of anxiety comes with this pandemic, but there are ways to cope. We have more from VOA's Carol Pearson.
Empty shelves at the grocery store were one of the early signs that the new coronavirus was spreading in the U.S. People began buying and hoarding more food and supplies than they needed.
And when people's coping mechanisms are overwhelmed, they begin to do things to manage uncertainty.
Yeager says there are better ways people can cope with the stress.
They can ground themselves in conversations with family members, knowing that they're home and safe through the variety of communication methods we have today.
With video chats, people can see their family members and friends, even if they're far away. They can also use exercise to help them cope.
We know that that is useful for our physical well-being and our emotional well-being. There's great research on physical exertion being a good treatment for depression, for anxiety as well.
Another important thing is to set goals, even small ones.
We need to have things that are successes. We need to have things that are finished. We need to be able to say, oh, look at that, I did that. Because that's what helps mitigate the anxiety we're experiencing.
It also helps to look back at the way we've handled other challenges.
All of us are growing the most when we're living outside of our comfort zone. And certainly this is a time where the overwhelming majority of us are finding ourselves outside of our comfort zone.
And don't forget to laugh.
Doses of humor are good for us. I think it is a way to activate good brain chemistry and actually protect ourselves with better immune function. Humor is really good medicine.
And when you share an experience, even from a distance, it's a way of bringing the community together. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Millions of people have lost their jobs. Restaurants, movie theaters, and parks are closed due to the coronavirus. Yet there's some good things that are flourishing now, namely the plant business. Deanna Mitchell has more.
As weeks turn to months of sheltering in place, many are finding solace through gardening. Deemed an essential business in California, falling under the umbrella of agriculture, many plant nurseries are open. But for some, their sales have changed.
I've noticed a substantial uptick in vegetable sales. Before, we were known basically as selling drought-tolerant plants, shrubs, trees, cactus, and succulents. And now our vegetable sales have increased.
During wartime in the United States and Europe, many were encouraged to grow vegetable gardens, so-called victory gardens. It's something Richard Ward remembers, born near the end of World War II.
I remember we had tomatoes and beans and lettuce and, oh, corn. We had corn, too. I think people are really looking forward to growing things. I think that's helping their lift their spirits and everything.
You know, you can only work so much, and then you're at home, and then you have to do something. You can't go out and exercise or do the things you might normally do. And so I think one of the alternatives is to garden. It does release a lot of stress. It's stressful staying home.
John Camp is a former urban planner turned landscape designer. He enjoys working in his own garden, as well as the gardens in his neighborhood.
A lot of people over the past 10 years have been converting their yards into gardens as opposed to just lawn, partly because of the drought we had a few years back. So it's actually a really nice neighborhood to walk around in because in front yards you have all these gardens full of flowers. And I come out here multiple times a day just to take a break. It's just a way to kind of de-stress and see that the world is continuing. There are bees, there are butterflies, there are birds. They're all doing their thing regardless of the fact there's coronavirus all around us, I guess.
Acknowledging the times we live in, many nurseries are even offering curbside service if you call ahead. For VOA News, Dina Mitchell, Oakland, California.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, as well as YouTube, all at VOA Asia. You can also find us on our website at voanews.com. We thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join us today. We also thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We wish you a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.